Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com. Full Service Radio.
Welcome to the Dolcezza Server Experience. We are live at the Line Hotel. This is Violeta Edelman, your host, and I'm here with my partner,
Rob Duncan, Dolcezza Gelato.
We're very excited to be in Full Service Radio. And today we're talking to filmmaker Thibaut Fagon. He directed, produced, and edited Overalls and Aprons. It's a film that seeks to answer the question, is sustainability sustainable? And to do so, he interviewed farmers, chefs, nutritionists, doctors, and economists. And he examined the idea of sustainability through the lens of the local Charleston food scene. So thank you so much for coming to our show, Thibaut. It's good to have you.
Thank you so much, guys. And I think this is very grateful to be here. And you guys also have been friends for the last several years. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity and also to talk about this film and necessity of talking about real food again.
For sure.
We met at the Eden's event, right? The Union Market James Beard thing or something?
Yeah.
A couple years ago, about
2014.
Screening the film, and we were doing the desserts there or something.
That's right.
The cool. James Beard dinner. That's a good place to meet.
I think a Sunday supper or something like that.
So,
Thibaut, you've narrowed the discussion to a single location in your film, Lowcountry. So why? Why focusing on that region?
Well, I'm looking at systems and from a local perspective. I think it's easier for us to identify some of the challenges because I think we can engage much more on an immediate level. So it was really, for me, it was a question of really seeing if this is more than just a marketing scheme, if we're really talking about real food, and real food comes from our growers and the guys and gals that are producing, fishing, livestock, just raising beautiful animals. And so from that perspective, you know, these people that are feeding our communities, how are they being remunerated, you know, financially? Is it viable? Is there a lifestyle? Especially my big mission is to reconnect culture to agriculture. So how do we look at leveraging the next generation to come out and farm? So these local landscapes really engage a more immediate way to look at relationships again, to look at what a community is and what does it mean to feed a community, and what's thriving in within that community. So it's getting to see from a small system how.
So what did you find talking to the farmers and fishers and producers?
Yeah, what I found, it's farm is hard work. It's expensive.
There's this idea of farming, right? That is like this romantic idea, and then they kick your ass.
You know, I was so funny. Yeah. I was watching Dishes last night after dinner, and I sat there and looked at Violeta last night and said, imagine the level, if we were a farmer, the amount of work that goes into what it is that you do, the amount of vulnerability that you have to the weather and the cycles and the seasons, and the amount of money that you make from doing all of that. It's like it's unsustainable.
Well, is it?
Well,
that's the question.
Well, I guess that's the question. Now we got the man here.
It's only sustainable if we all sustain it, right?
Well, if we participate.
That's the point, right?
Yeah, that's right. If we participate, if we're giving the right information to understand what that participation means, that commitment to participate. So, and it stems from, you know, it starts with the immediate, the relationship to the other. How can we rebuild that community through food, through the landscape of, I mean, food is culture. And for me, I really wanted to see what, you know, what that was all about in terms of the culinary culture. I was in Charleston and seeing the, you know, all the accolades and the way we were celebrating food and the way some of these chefs were getting recognition and honored by the James Beard Foundations, you know, just
and big institutions. And the farmers are always forgotten, right?
To a certain degree. I think what Charleston was doing is that, and are still doing, but it's difficult because land is also in the equation. It's getting more expensive, so it's becoming a very sensitive subject to keep the land and farming on it. But the big, just to answer your first question, I guess it was, you know, are these farmers making ends meet? And the reality, and can these situations, can these systems also be emancipated within, you know, within themselves? And I think the money, it's a tough life, because we need to demystify the true cost of food. We need to understand where our money is going in terms of how we collectively buy into this system, the support system of organizing a landscape for us to get food. You know, where is that money going, and who's getting a piece of that money? So that's one thing. And when we get that information, we realize that local food is actually way less expensive than actually the bill that we're paying to collectively build these big centralized food systems. The big thing with these systems is not only are they expensive to get them going, but the externalities of these systems are costing us a lot, because they're degrading our environment. We're not getting healthier. You know, the biggest strain.
So you're
in
talking about big industry versus the local farming
exactly.
community. That's what you're talking
then,
about.
Then all the rules that are written on Capitol Hill to subsidize or
That's
support
right.
or allow
That's
for
right.
that system of the industrial food system to run and operate the way that it does, that takes very little account for the small family farmer. They're not the ones sitting at the table that participate to write the rules for that.
Our entire agricultural system is basically built on cheap oil, right? I mean, that's kind of what it is.
Leftover ammonium nitrate post-World War II began.
It's
we
true.
Need something to do with all this ammonium
and
nitrate.
And one of the main
We're not
issues
making
is,
bombs.
Is poultry, dairy, and cattle, no? Mm. And these industries that are monopolies.
Yeah.
And they control everything, and they're monocultures.
Yeah.
So, therefore...
And it's fed
but
by
I think
fueled and fed by corn.
When we talk so big, you know, like we kind of all feel very defeated. And I think that's why... I want to keep talking about Charleston.
Yeah. Well, that's
farmers
why I bring it
see,
back to your local landscape.
Yes,
and you can start seeing
so.
From your own eyes.
Yeah.
You can start meeting your farmers.
Act locally, think globally,
yes.
That kind of thing, which is so
And that's
true.
The portrayal I wanted to illustrate is that, you know, within your community, see if it's really viable. Go meet your producers. You know, go celebrate them, because we need them, the average
So
age
let
of
me
a farmer.
Interject right there. Okay, I'm going to be doing this a lot.
I know. I need to start finishing a little bit of my thought, because then it's going.
No,
you know,
no.
Want to answer some questions, and I developed them a little bit to kind of
go
get in there.
Go, Tebow, and then I'll and then
just one thing
I'll forget, but it's okay.
One thing I do want to share is that it's this immediate, you know, this immediate engagement of understanding from a local perspective. You can travel the distance to get to see if that's romantic or if it's a reality. You know, can we see the value of what these guys and gals are doing in our community? And when you start seeing firsthand, you know, what they're doing to bring home the bounty that you're going to be eating through fish or whatever, or the way it, you know, the time it takes to produce a quality item, product, and deliver it, and the whole logistics even to get it to your plate, and the hard work that it takes. I think it brings you closer to that reality, and then it starts justifying the value of the true cost of what it takes to bring a product to that level. And then you're talking about, you know, the seasonality. You're talking about the health benefits, the high dense nutrient benefits of these items, how beneficial they are for you. And that was the big question for me was, you know, from a local perspective, as the transition from these big systems, because we're going to need to transition, because you highlighted that they're fully, you know, they're not sustainable, because they're basically tributary to fossil fuel. And
they're making
and
us
water.
Sick, and they're making
exactly.
the environment sick.
Exactly. So, and that's
the
not
planet.
Sustainable. Yeah, in and of itself. So, what is the transition? And the transition needs to be talked about, because not talking about this reality is costing us a lot. And I say that because the biggest drain in our economy is healthcare. That's completely attributed to our diet, and our diet is dictated by these big models, these big farm systems, these big industrialized system that are, it's really not creating a real food product. So
do you know, we spend twice the money that we spend, that people spend in Europe in healthcare. That's one of the examples.
Yeah, but
and
it's
associated to chronic diseases linked to
exactly.
diet. I mean, that's
totally.
What it is.
Totally.
So you want to get healthcare under control, and to do that, you need to reform the food system.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
Yeah, and the immediacy of seeing that reality firsthand, your producers, then you start having you know, more transparency, more information. Then you start seeing the honest, you know, the honest and the vulnerable structure of these professions, and why people, the young generation, is not coming back to it. It's romantic at first, and it sounds beautiful. We create all these films, but I wanted to give an honest depiction of these businesses. And in the film, it was it took a 4-year process to film, and you really see the tension, you know, from farmers that were doing really well, and then all of a sudden that were the heroes of the community, and then they had to fold because just the infrastructure alone doesn't help their day-to-day. It's very, very, very difficult. We need to rebuild these infrastructures. And so finding and seeing that firsthand, it gets you more connected. It gets you more sensitive to that reality. And then it justifies a little more why you're going to spend at the farmer's market. But it's not just spending a little more at the farmer's market. It's the transparency of knowing that the farmer at the farmer's market is really in the field. You know, it's not a reseller. So it's also doing your homework like we do when it's time to buy a car or even a washing machine. You know, we're going to spend hours upon hours, but when it's time to put real food in the stomach, we take it for granted. We don't put any initiative to a certain degree.
I think people are more and more, they want to know where their food comes from. I think the American eater is... it's very interested in the question of, you know, who is growing the food that they're putting in their mouth and are giving to their kids. I think that's the vulnerability that we find.
The younger generation definitely more does much more so than the older generation, as far as that whole who's the farmer, is it local, what goes into it. They're more interested, I think, in that. I mean, there's a whole health revolution happening right now with the youth, with the millennials right now. I mean, look at everything going plant-based.
It's a $50 billion alternative food economy at this point. And that's, guys, $50 billion is little food. It's not big food. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a lot, but it's not compared to industry.
Did most of the farmers that you talked to and that you worked with and that you filmed, did a lot of them, some of them, most of them, struggle to make ends meet? All of them?
Most of them do.
Because that's what we get. Every single farmer that we work with, there's like maybe one group of farmers that are okay, but it's because they're
doing weed now.
Not
smoking, but growing.
Well, no. I mean, that's
the only one that's doing
backed,
well.
Or they're backed by big money, you know. Yeah. But anybody that's kind of doing it on their own without the deep nets or the good cannabis,
maybe smoking it too. I don't know.
Are struggling.
And
go ahead.
No, I guess to answer that question is I think it's seeing the participation. I think the more we're informed, the more likely we are to participate and understand why we need to participate. So that's why I wanted to show it from a local perspective, so we can have this immediate access to go see if that's the reality, and then really engage and get empowered by the engagement of why this is important. So in the film, I don't just, you know, I just don't go after chefs. I also look at the equitability of that food system. How can everyone have access to it? So it's not just an elitist, you know, endeavor or
very expensive.
So how, to a certain degree it is, but like I said, if we demystify the true costs and we get institutions, we put enough pressures, you know, grassroots pressures to awaken institutions to participate, like healthcare, you know, some, like in Charleston, it was a medical institution that decided to put a farm in the worst economic downturn after 2008. They retrofitted a parking lot to put a working farm, which had, you know, weekly schedule of how to seed all the way to harvest. It was fully organic and people can go in there, and it was free food for the community. So it was reawakening the spirit that this is the farm life. And then also the healthcare institution to have voice, to communicate that we want to be in this movement, and we're not just here to put you through a surgical procedure. We're here also to educate preventative health. It's meaning looking at your food, your diet. So this was a great message to communicate. And with that, they also had therapies for weight loss. They had psychiatric therapies there. They had what else did they have? They had all these different programs that really, but what it communicated was we want to be part of this conversation. And that's key. And also engaging people to walk on a farm to see the process of growing and also what's growing and thriving in the community. And the more you can look at your local community, then you can really diversify the amount of different types of tomatoes or different types of peaches or different types of cantaloupes, where most of what we get has to be tributary to distribution. So the skin needs to be super resilient. It needs to be in shape for a month, maybe 3 weeks, 2 weeks, to a month, to 2 months.
It needs to look pretty.
Macintosh apple example. Exactly. It's like why everybody just knows that apple.
Exactly. But when you go local in the season, people's like, oh, I'm tired of some of the seasons, just
asparagus.
Winter root vegetables, asparagus. But let's look at the varieties of different fruits and vegetables that can have different flavors and flavors that are that your terroir, your landscape will give forward, and then we can work to to look at, you know, those specific seeds that are going to give off even more flavor, and then you get more sensitive to terroir. And I think the more you can taste your environment, the more of an environmentalist you are, because now the nature's informing you of what it needs and what it loves. And
this was like, and all of our grandparents were, they were already like this.
I agree.
You know, before the big supermarkets and everything. My grandparents all had their little plots of land in North Georgia mountains and grew their beans and their corn and all, you know, and so they ate like this, kind of our generation.
Totally.
Who is that farmer that actually preserves the seeds in
Glenn?
That,
so Glenn Roberts.
Tell me about Glenn Roberts. He seems amazing.
Glenn Roberts is amazing. He's in my film. I start the film with him, and I end it with him as well, because he, what he's done in the Low Country, and it's not just him. It's his cohorts, and he's originally from the South. Grew up in San Diego, but what he resonated was with his family, and so they're from the Edisto, the Low Country of South Carolina, and all the stories in the old cookbooks. And talking about the cuisine, the Low Country cuisine, the Carolina Rice Kitchen, the first cookbook, one of the first cookbook of America. And so talking about these recipes, but the ingredients were lost. So you were cooking these recipes, but the soul was gone. So he decided to find out what were these ingredients, you know, after emancipation, what were the ingredients that, you know, no one was growing anymore? Because, of course, the reality of enslavement that was over and growing rice and a lot of these commodity crops that did have flavor then, they weren't there anymore. Everybody moved out and we moved to scalability, you know, to economics of scale, or that were, you know, for those type of commodities, you know, without free labor, it was too expensive. So Glenn decided to like reinstitutionalize the rice culture in South Carolina, which is beautiful. Now South Carolina is a silver star in rice growing. So it's becoming, you know, but the way they diversify, the way they grow their rice, it's a small acreage, maybe 35 the most or 40, and they're amazing farmers. And so the rice, they found the original seeds, the heirloom seed, the landrace seeds of the Carolina gold, of the Charleston gold, and all these other varieties that were grown back then. Through looking at these you know, a lot of the old folks in the country that kept eating that cuisine and kept growing that, you know, those ingredients. So that's what he's done. And then he's put the mill's so key to a rural environment. It's kind of like the heartbeat of the rural community, because that's where you transform, where you process and transform everyone's good, whatever they're growing. So from flours, any type of grain. So he's in the cereal. So a lot of grains he's doing, converting and transforming. So rice was one of them. He's really into corn. Started with corn, and then he found the rice and all the other pantry, you know, the staple pantry of the Carolina rice.
He has this black corn, right?
He has the Jimmy Red. He has all types of corn. He goes all over the world, and
he revitalized Southern food, basically. He brought it back, right? This is Southern, and we had lost it, and here it is again.
Some of the ingredients, and he's just such a great educator. He's very humble too. It's all about his team, and it's also his business model within it. Within Anson Mills, it's really beautiful. From what I've gathered, is his benefits, his profit, basically turns it back into seeds, because he feels that seeds is a more important currency than anything out there, and more than gold than anything. And so he balances at the end of the year. He just zeroes out his balance sheet, and all the profit turns it into seeds, and then he gives his seeds for free to anybody who wants to grow. You know, because he's really engaging the next generation to come out and see that there is a market, and he has created markets with his portfolio of chefs. So yeah, he is selling a rice that is not affordable to everyone, but yet he's trying to allow everyone to grow it so people can have access to it.
Cool, yeah. That's awesome. So guys, we're talking to filmmaker Thibaut Fagonde. I want to say your last name correctly, but
Fagonde.
Thibaut Fagonde.
Thibaut Fagonde. Please, you say
it like
with
that.
A sexy French accent.
Thibaut Fagonde.
That I don't have. And you're listening to the Altissa Sherber Experience. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back, guys, very soon.
Thank you.
Full Service Radio. Welcome back to the Altezza Sherber Experience. We are live at the Line Hotel. We're talking today to our friend and filmmaker,
Thibaut Fagonde.
Thank you.
Much more legitimate.
We're checking out his film, Overalls and Aprons. It's a film that focuses on sustainability in the Low Country, and we're just talking about this amazing farmer who preserves all these seeds so that we can actually eat good food, real food.
Food that was here before, the heirloom varieties of the beans and the grains, whether it's rice or corn, that in the monoculture industrial world gets lost forever if you lose the seeds, and then, which is the packets of DNA and information of what that actually is.
That's right.
So you're trying to convince people to basically base their purchasing decisions on sustainability, and I think like a lot of us want to believe that we do that, but we do it half-assed, right? I mean, it's just like we go to Whole Foods, we get our, non-GMO, like hormones-free stuff, and we go to the farmer's market. But you're more into like, hey, let's do it 100%. Let's be hardcore about this.
Not necessarily hardcore. And that's okay, why I'm not trying to convince. I'm trying to entertain. I'm trying to communicate a reality, like I said. It's not talking about real food. It's costing us a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So what can we do to prevent the drain, this economic drain, which is healthcare, which is, like I said, attributed to diet, and that's dictated by our big systems that are not sustainable. So how can we find a transition? I'm into the transition at whatever level. So
I
I'm
like
into anyone. Yeah, I'm into anyone doing good agricultural practices. I'm into the sustainability of the transition. I'm not the hardcore. I'm not trying to be divisive. I'm really trying to celebrate even the big guys. How do we transition them? How do we empower them to transition? Because anyone who farms, their soil is their asset. They have a love relationship with their soil. So even though they're compromised.
Or
by
a hate relationship if you're spraying it full of chemicals and monocropping that shit. True, you're hating
that. I think it's looking, it's leveraging a market, leveraging real facts about how do you create the transition, how you can still make money, how can we also all agree that these are the type of systems that we want, because the current one is not sustainable, so we need to look at smaller models, and how do we diversify them, how can we bring agrarian kind of cultures back. And I'm not talking in back in its old ways. Let's use technology. Let's use what we have, what we've created, what we've collectively done together, learned along the way. We can use old style, old techniques, and bring technologies to them so it can facilitate. Because the soil is low. It's a backbreaking job. It's hard work. It's very expensive because the infrastructure is gone, and no one understands why we're asking a certain price for the food. But if we know the true cost of the value meal, this 99 cents burger, we did the economics on that piece of 99 cents burger, it's really closer to $50. And I'm going to give anybody out there who's listening, that task to really to tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Explain that.
Well, in the film, I demystify the true cost of food. So I get into this logic that the cost of real food, of local food, is actually cheaper than the cost of the value meal. So what happens is that the value meal, maybe it's less expensive. It's that 99 cents meal, but it's been subsidized. So that means we've collectively agreed that we're going to subsidize a system for us to get this meal at a low price. But within this model, these people that are growing these within these models, they don't care for these externalities. These models are not these models of agriculture, of raising livestock and slaughtering, but mostly raising livestock and even produce at that level. And it's creating these externalities that are compromising the integrity of the proper environment in which they're growing. And they don't participate. They don't put those variables in their economic equation. If they did, then it would outweigh actually what they're profiting.
The true cost
of
bringing
the
food, like a Big Mac or whatever.
So we're hit. We're not getting healthier because these systems are not only polluting the environment, but they're polluting our system.
Yeah.
And so we're paying that in healthcare, in the premiums of the healthcare, and then we're paying in environmental degradation. And so from there, you're realizing that the true cost of that value meal is actually way more expensive than what it initially is.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's because the government is subsidizing
right.
it. I mean,
well, we are. We need to realize the
when
government.
When I say the government,
the government,
I say our taxes, right?
Well, we are the government.
Yes and
we
no,
need to
right?
Have
yeah.
voice. Talking about food is very political right
it
now.
It is very yeah. political. It's
we
true.
We need to have voice.
But yeah, yeah.
So the government subsidizes high fructose corn syrup.
We agree for the government.
And then they also subsidize or us. And then they also subsidize the cost of treating type to diabetes.
That's
I mean,
right.
they do. So yeah. they, yeah.
The whole thing's paid
yeah.
for.
Yeah.
U.S. government.
Good. America.
Do you see the youth right now, like the, particularly the millennials and then whatever the one is after that, G, Z, whatever it yeah. is, the Generation Z. Do you see the young change in this as far as the, it feels like it's very early in the stages of it, but yeah. it feels like there's such a difference of the youth
I think
their technology
there,
and their
there
diets.
Is, but I think we got to get back into embodiment. What does it mean to be an embodiment? That means we're going to have to work the body, and you can't just work it intellectually. We need to understand what it is to work the body. And the body also, the more we work it, the more it informs us. So yeah, hard work.
What do you mean
work.
By that?
So farming. So that it's not just using our heads. We need to use our heads, but also the language of what the body
so
does.
So you're saying
with
for people to understand, they need to go and farm? Is that what
well,
you're saying?
I think
return to the
you know, touching
or
soil
go and exercise
and watching the process of growth of uh-huh. a 3-month process, going and observing processes.
Being more
is
in
key.
Touch with nature?
Yeah,
that?
We're more into a quick fix culture, you know, time,
well, yeah,
convenience,
sure.
and all of these
they
things.
They need to
and,
just go eat magic and, mushrooms
yeah,
or something like
well,
that, right? Go out to the farm
that's
with
the
5 dried
of,
grams in a cornfield, and the UFOs will surround you, I guarantee you.
And then what? You're going to understand what it is?
No, I think the body will
take off
for?
Your clothes and. I, just drop off the planet for good.
I think the
all
connection.
Right.
I think
I
the
like
connection.
That.
What the hell are we talking about?
I don't know, but it sounds
I know.
Fun.
Sounds like
fun.
A lot of fun.
You know what?
Yeah.
This is a better conversation. Let's continue that one.
But
anyway,
I think the
overalls and aliens. sequel the overall apron I like it
man I think
is there anything without the apron now no,
yeah.
is there anything below the apron
there's nothing the apron doesn't exist it's a metaphor
it's
a exactly and so
how
I
do
think
we go back to let's be serious
yeah too many
not too serious
not
know,
too
we got
serious.
We gotta have fun
subject
with life
tangents.
We only have one life and at the end I think we value the intellect to a point where we build privileges and entitlement. And so it's not just the intellect that moves. It's what is intelligence. And when we see all these universities, like I was just passing, sometimes I'll go work at George, what's it called? Georgetown
George
University.
George
Washington.
Georgetown.
George. Yeah, there's a lot of George in
George,
town.
George of the jungle.
And I was at Georgetown University. And so I'm walking through campus, and these are higher education. You know, this is, and it's a pretty, it's a big name school too. And they have a Chick-fil-A. There, you know, it's like, how do you, you know, how do you talk about food? How, what are you communicating at a higher education?
I wonder if that one's closed
that
on Sundays.
Well, and that's not just that; it's NYU. I was just invited at Clemson for this food summit, where also Duke University participated, and where all these food system folks. And I spoke about food justice and food security, and also my film and all this stuff. And basically, my big thing was I was telling students, you guys need to get. They have a Chick-fil-A on campus, and what are we communicating? You know, at that level, you know, and that's a land grant institute. You know, that's one of the agricultural institutions, that the university institution that's supposed to talk about real food, about agriculture. And so that's already, you know, the first thing we need to, you know, we need to really take in consideration. But where I was going with this is I don't remember anymore.
The aliens?
The aliens
in the
right.
cornfield.
So
I think,
no, but the big question for me, I think, you know, to answer even earlier concerns, the sustainability of sustainability, you know, these we need to the more we can see and know who and how we're farming, the more connected we'll be. And the more informed we will be to make informed choices, to have more choices, to see what our choices are. And yeah, voting
I
with
agree,
our dollar.
I agree, but it's hard for people who are living their lives and they have no access to maybe a job, or they, you know, for those that are like in a very vulnerable situation and they don't have access to fresh food, I don't know if I can say, hey, You should go to the farm. You know what
I mean? But let's not look at everybody. Let's look at a lot of people, like all these kids that are so-called. There's a lot of people at a higher education. They should understand the intelligence
for sure.
of it all.
I mean,
so that's where I was going to with this.
But those are not the ones that are suffering from type 2. I think it's a bunch of bullshit. Sorry.
Up at that level. Yeah, no, like everybody's out there bloating their chest. And
totally,
just for their
totally.
Own,
so
own
then what are we, so then what are we cultivating as a species, if you want? Are those the right, is that?
Cultivating a lot of shit right now at the species level to me.
So the reality is that I think our farmers out on all levels, our fishers and farmers are not being, it's tough for them to make a real living. For them to, it's a lifestyle choice, which is a beautiful one, but for them to have kids, for them to instill a profession that's honorable for their kids to want to take that profession, most farmers send their kids to these cities or these universities because they don't want them to endure what they've been enduring.
Yeah.
But the love, and in the film you see it, the love and connection, even though it's hard, that they have with the land is what keeps them doing 100%. And persisting. And there's a message there when you go film those folks. There's a message of why are these people persistent when they're against all odds, and you see that reality and you cry and you fall in love. It's just there's something about these people that are feeding us, and yet they're not making ends meet, and they keep feeding us. What keeps them feeding us? There's something greater, and that's, to me, is that gem. And I think once you connect with that reality, it's what keeps you going, and it's what life is. And it's not the intellectual, representation of what the human species is. I think it's living it, embodying it. Like, you can only feel it. You know, you can't be told what it is and how it is. You can only feel that reality.
That's food as medicine.
It totally
That's
is.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Totally is. Totally is.
And I think joining the process of actually, like, you're creating and cultivating your food that you're putting in your body and feeding your family. Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, at a that deep level, it's very satisfying to participate in that, as opposed to going to a grocery store and buying something that you have no idea the whole backstory or where it comes from. So to actively participate, it's a beautiful thing. But the thing is, I think, like, the greater question is to eat healthy food. I think everybody could agree on saying that's a good thing. We should try to have everybody on the planet access to good, healthy, whole food, but at an affordable price. But for that
at a just price,
and
we'll understand.
But for that to happen, I mean, it's like there's so you have to get the support of the systems that sets all the economics in place to not allow that to happen. And they're right now. Currently, there's a lot of interests that don't want that to happen.
Well, they don't, but I think if you, it's all about transparency and honesty. And I think if you're
it's about the market.
No, it is.
That's why I asked about the youth, because the youth, which seems to be, again, time will tell, because it's not fully expressed yet. Yeah. If the youth, for example, comes and says, we demand healthier food, healthier offerings, then the market will bend that direction.
I fully agree.
I mean, it's really at the bottom.
And that's happening. Plant-based is taking over.
The variables are being put in place.
But again, we're just talking about privileged people here. And
we talk about the going to buy a whole chicken at the farmer's market. Yeah. That whole chicken's $25. Mm-hmm. And I mean, justifiably so, because of all the steps and the work that goes into it. First, we need to give people jobs
and then access to healthy food and then access to healthcare.
Or make the cost for the farmer harvesting that chicken and bringing it to a local market to have his cost, or, have some government support that's supporting only the Purdue chickens to come their way and support, so their cost of bringing that food to the market is also less.
For sure. I think the other thing why I went for local markets, local systems, is the more you can see what's happening in these local systems, the more you can be sensitive to the rhythm of these local systems. And the rhythm's key, because are we supposed to eat chicken every day? When we're eating a plant-based diets that's nutrient dense. So now we don't need that much meat. We don't need that much meat. And, the seasonality will also dictate how much meat and how much. And back then also, when we had the meat, it was a celebration of the season, of the harvest, of certain things. And the ritual of the killing of the animal was the death of the animal. And the ritual of death was understood in a completely different perspective. So as soon as, should we eat all and consume all these animals? That's the other question, too, we need to ask ourselves. And so a rich plant-based diet that's gone through its ripeness, that means the last few days, even the last few week to the last few 10 days, you know, the phytochemicals, all these high-dense nutrients that goes into the ripening process that in a local system you can bring direct to consumers, that is key to health. And that's going to reshape, because all these sugars are there, that's going to reshape our palates to understand that's why we need to eat what grows and thrives super well in our communities. So those are one of the things. But, you know, that's but communicating is key. How do you communicate to bring such a groundswell of excitement? And when I mean communicate, I like to entertain, because I like to meet people halfway where they are. I don't want to educate them, because we're educated and we're tired of it, and we're getting desensitized.
Can turn off a lot of people.
So how can you educate with real stories, with powerful, honest stories, not sensationalized stories that are not grounded into anything meaningful? When you look at people that are assuming reality and you see their stories and you hear them, there's something else that connects to you. And that's what I wanted to show. So beginning of my film, I just ask one question. I let go of the entire, I don't narrate. I let my whole community then tell me its story. I was welcomed in their community. You guys share me your story, because it's an important one. And so that's what I did with this film. And then it starts with, you know, I follow these chefs. They bring me to their environment. You see the relationship. The relationship starts.
You see these learning networks.
Yeah, there's Sean Brock, Mike Latta, all the big stars in Charleston. And I started in 2011, finished in 14. And my goal with this film is now to look at the DC landscape. And the spirit of Charleston, it was overalls and aprons made in Charleston, it was to look at America's first cuisine and America's oldest profession under decline, and a cuisine that has a cultural heritage. And we're re-celebrating, and people are coming back to re-celebrating that cuisine that now has the ingredients back in place. So we're having authentic food again. People want authentic stories, authentic meals, authentic, honest people. We need to reconnect. That's the whole thing in community. It's rebuilding community, shaping community. That's huge. And then the next thing, what I want to do with the film right now, and I'm organizing the key players in the D.C. area, is looking at D.C., overalls and aprons made in D.C., but with the spirit of the film more being policy-driven. What's on the table? Who are the movers and shakers and players in this town looking at real food? How are we moving it? It's not about breaking down the Bible, the farm bill, which is so complex, so hard to dismantle. How are we going to engage the right people to really communicate a powerful story that's going to engage a grassroots movement that's going to start putting pressures on institutions that need to now really start participating? And that's where the big momentum then starts.
So it
starts
with
the chefs, people like you, Rob, when I first met you, and that's where we connected. You know, you didn't just want to give a product. Your product, you wanted integrity. You wanted terroir. You wanted season. You wanted to solicit the our growers, you know, from the milk, from just the whole the product, and it speaks for itself. And I'm so proud of both of you guys to have done a business and keep that integrity within the business and within the landscape and build a business. That's not easy, to look at the reality of food and build a business around
it's
that.
Tough.
I'm telling you, I celebrate you guys. Congrats.
We celebrate you.
Yeah, for showing.
That's why you're here.
For showing
and so,
that.
And so the DC one would be more about communicating what's happening with people that are building businesses that are trying to also communicate that reality. So you guys are the gateway. You guys are the real PR of what's out there for
gateway
the farmers.
Gateway drug, that's what they always call me.
That's right.
Start on him. And
you are a drug. You are a drug. When we meet you, we're just too excited. We can't let go.
Whatever.
And you too, Violeta. But,
well, thank you so much.
But I mean, the DC overalls,
yes,
and aprons made in DC,
tell
that's
us.
The last thing I'll say.
I'm
right now getting the talents together. You guys will definitely be involved. Jonathan Bethany with and other producers, you know, a great, great big chef. I want a lot of women in this film, because they've been our nurturers, and they've fed communities forever. Big Mama to La Mama to all communities have this mother of feeding the community. They know how to feed best. We need to start representing women more on that level, on all level. They're the true nurturers. They give birth to us. They know how to nourish people. And we need to bring the light also to them, but also through them, through their lens, then show the producers and why they're involved, why they want flavor through those producers.
And this is something that if these kinds of changes are to be made and to be felt, it's, you know, you have the ground guys, the farmers and the chefs, but you've got to talk like, and that's why DC would be a place to do it at the policy level.
Totally.
That are writing these laws, these bills, these rules, regulations that will automatically, when put into place, will change the rest of it immediately.
And we just need to communicate it. Find a beautiful story that highlights not only the players, that it's hard, man. I'm with policy folks, and it's been difficult to see what they're up against. You know, big lobbies, and it's not easy, but yet they have the heart and the spirit, and they look at our farmers, they see what they're going through, and they're going to put the same action in heart and spirit so we can get things done. And I think we can. I really do. I think we just need to get excited. We need to feel empowered. So if you communicate the right stories, you'll communicate the right people to connect with, so we can have more of that groundswell, you know, this energy that just cannot be stopped, you know. And then there's culture here. There is culture when it comes to our heritage of food. You know, I went after the Lowcountry area of a food community, but the Chesapeake, you know, they predate by 100 years.
Each one could be regional.
You know? I mean, this is the legacy and the culture of food. We need to reignite that. Let people know the American culture, the American food culture. It's huge here. So let's get them to taste, because there's a lot of growers that are doing amazing. They're producing deliciousness. Get them to re-engage with those products and see why we need to resurrect and look at local systems, because that's the way. That's the transition. So we need to communicate a hard story. And I encourage everybody to, you know, to support what I'm trying to do. And I'll start launching in a couple of weeks. And through Dolcezza, through Rob and Violetta, they'll also put me in the right, because they're guiding me with connecting me to the right people. But that's the last thing I'll say. And
stay tuned for the DC version of overalls and aprons, you all. Yeah, thank you, Thibaut, so much for being here.
Thibaut, thank you for coming
thank
on. And
so
keep fighting a good fight.
Yes. Yeah, and we'll see you next time you're back in DC, and we'll go skateboarding.
That's right.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Thank you, everybody.
Have a beautiful day.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.